Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! For much of America, today is being treated as New Year's Day. There have been New Year's Day bowl games all day long because, well, the NFL is not willing to play on Christmas Sunday, but they will play on New Year's Day Sunday. So the traditional college bowl game thing got all sideways. And even as we speak, somebody's playing somewhere. I guess I'm rooting for the Badgers in tonight's Rose Bowl matchup. Let's see. No, seriously. Government offices were closed today. Banks were closed. Yada, yada, yada. And maybe I wouldn't have been here, except for the fact that I missed on Friday and didn't want to. Many of you saw via Twitter and or Facebook why I wasn't here, but for those of you who didn't, you are deserving of an explanation, and I will tender it now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. See, I forget to do that once in a while. This is Conversation Radio. Unlike really any other you're likely to find. And I would have been here Friday for a New Year's Eve edition of The Horn, save for the fact that, and this is, after all, Moran Monday, right? Yep, second day of January. It's a Monday. So let me get things started with a Moran Monday nomination. Let me nominate for Moran Monday, first right out of the box. And this ain't political, neither is it social or cultural. No, this is personal. What's that you say, Reverbo, make it personal? Yeah. My nominee... Oh, God. Oh, goodness me. Here, let's do this right. Here we go. That's right up, that's right, that's right. Step right up, hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up to this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and step inside where you will encounter morons of all stripes, right-wing morons, libertarian morons, Republican morons everywhere. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. This is The Horn, and this is Moran Monday. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Yes, indeedy, it is Moran Monday on The Horn. And as I said, my first nomination goes out to the dude who rear-ended my wife and son Friday. You know, there's an old joke out there. Did you hear about the Massey worker who heard that 75% of all traffic accidents happen within 5 miles of home, so he moved? I'll be here all week. Try the deal. Don't forget to tip your waiter. Well, that... Yeah, we were reminded on Friday of the truth of that actual statistic. And I was, and there was no small amount of irony involved with the fact that it was just the previous evening's show when I believe it was Albert and I who were discussing the fact that something between 45 and 65% of all drivers on the road in America today, it is said, could not pass a driver's test. You know, you take one once when you're 16 and then, barring profoundly unforeseen, you never have to take another test, so you're good to go. And I pointed out that some statistic indicated years ago that 48% of all traffic fatalities are caused by people under the influence of alcohol, which means 52% of traffic fatalities are caused by sober people, which means that your odds are really not very good either way. Most grievous traffic accidents in West Virginia happen on rural two-lane roads. That's largely because most of West Virginia is rural two-lane roads to the extent that we have roads. I mean, there's interstates and stuff, but not just a hell of a lot of them. So statistically, it would stand to reason that that would be the case, but it's also because these are twisting, curvy, occasionally poorly maintained roads, roads that are chewed to pieces by monster coal trucks that run up and down them with reckless abandon. It makes for an unpleasant situation. And the situation became all the more unpleasant on Friday afternoon at approximately 1:55 p.m. I had been at a meeting, and I got a call from Ferg saying, "Dad, we've been in a wreck." Now, any parent out there who has ever gotten that call knows exactly the feeling that runs through you. It is like cold hell running through your bloodstream. Time stops, everything freezes, and there is that sensation of, you know, life will never be the same again, and you just start hoping against hope that they're okay. And if you happen to be, and if you're not there, and I was about 45 minutes away, and I tried to maintain my composure. I'm rather good at that maintaining my composure thing. You might be surprised, but it's true. I maintained my composure and managed to get home and find out what had happened. My wife and the boy were coming back from downtown, which is a very loose term to use for going down to the little town that still exists a couple of miles away from us. They were coming back from downtown, and there's an intersection that, in the course of teaching Ferg about driving, him being 16 now and everything, I have pointed out to him repeatedly is an incredibly dangerous intersection. Because when you're eastbound on the road and you're going to turn left onto our road, the hill coming toward you is more or less blind, and you don't see what's coming at you until it's about, 50 yards from you. So, it's really dangerous. So, yeah, Agnes is a good driver. And she is reasonable and prudent. And so she slowed as she prepared to make her left turn onto the road where our house is. You can see our house from the road. She turned on her signal. They were both wearing their seat belts. And a cable company truck had just turned left in front of her. It wasn't a dart out. It was just traffic as normal. Many of you have been through this. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And so she goes to make her left turn when out of nowhere comes this dude in a Toyota RAV4 and just plows the living daylights out of the rear end of the rusty red pickup truck. I mean, no brakes, no skid marks, just wham. Completely destroyed the right rear of that 3/4-ton Dodge pickup truck. If I ever had a moment to express my profound love of Detroit iron, well, my truck was actually built in Mexico, but, you know, this would be it. Elevated up off the ground, the RAV4 that slammed into them basically reverted to its ore state. It was hardly recognizable. I mean, you could see the Toyota badge, and that was about it. Oh, that's what that was. And hit the truck so hard. Now, that thing has a full bed. I mean, it's a work truck. It has an 8.5-foot bed on it. Now, it took that 8.5-foot truck bed and jammed it up into the cab. You know, they're separate components on the frame rails. Slammed it up in there, and, well, there you have it. So I got home, had to, Agnes would tell you herself that she was a bit of a mess, emotionally. And probably intellectually as well. Because those things are just not good for your psyche. And so I had to argue with her. News Ninja Susan was engaged in what she later told me was probably one of the most bizarre phone conversations she's ever had with her. We will leave the details out. And I was in the background saying, honey, we gotta leave. No, really, honey, we gotta go. And so eventually I got them piled into the other vehicle and drove them over to the nearest ER, where it was apparently, since it was the 30th of December, everybody went, I don't know, it was packed. It was like a MASH episode. And so we were there at about 5 o'clock, and we got out of the emergency room at 3 a.m. After which we had found out that, as we say here in the Hills and Hollers, Agnes is all stoved up, and Ferg is all stoved up, but Agnes is, well, also been referred to an orthopod. Ferg's going to need to see an internal medicine guy because he's got an enlarged spleen. That was inspiring. Some neurologic implications. And so begins the long and tormented process of dealing with a car wreck. And consequently, that is where I was on Friday, the 30th of December. Chat room moderator Lottie noting, oh my God, Bob, there's a lot of force there. Yeah, there is. I didn't even notice. It hit the front of the bed, hit the back of the cab so hard, it literally knocked paint loose. It wasn't a rub. The paint came loose from the metal. It's not rusty. It's just like bare metal with no paint on it. So I found out today. I finally found out who the other driver's insurance company allegedly was. And I found out today that he had not bothered to inform his insurance company that he had been in a wreck. So that tells you a little bit about what I'm probably facing going down the road. It's going to be a mess. And I guess we're going to have to bid a fond farewell to the rusty red pickup truck. It had $1,000 of brand new tires on it. I remember the day I bought that truck. It was a long time ago, 16 years ago, bought it brand new. And I thought it was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen, but I also bought it because we had a growing little family. Agnes was pregnant with Ferg at the time. I mean, this is a lot like, this is like Barry and Old Yeller to me, okay? And I thought, you know, this thing's big and it's sturdy and it's a 3/4 ton truck and it can withstand most anything. And you know, over the years, deer have committed suicide into it. All manner of things have happened. And there's no way it's not totaled. Might still be drivable. I have the an enviable task of beginning the process of getting estimates and wrestling with insurance adjusters. It's, well, those of you who have been through this know that it is a mess, and you know that it's a miserable experience, and you know that, well, I tried to tell Ferg about the first time I was in a wreck. I was 17, a little older than him, and got a muscle, so-called soft tissue injury. Insurance companies don't think about soft tissue injuries. So what? And to this day, you know, I can still wake up some mornings and it hitches up and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember the wreck. It's just a little, what? It's a little wrinkle in the web of life, I guess you'd say. But again, that's where I was Friday. Patty just tweeted, I absolutely second that emotion. The effer is a moron. I want to kick his myself. I mean, no skid marks. None. It's a two-lane road, but the speed limit's 55, and he had to be doing every bit of it. That Toyota RAV4, I mean, I guess it's supposed to, those are crumple zones, and I guess it's supposed to fold up like an accordion like that to protect the passenger cabin. Frankly, the RAV4 looks worse than the truck does, but the truck is, you know, the truck is Detroit iron. So there's that. Robert writes in from Australia, who was kind enough to send me the first New Year's greetings I saw, the distant shots of the fireworks over the Sydney Harbour Bridge. He says, I hope Agnes and Ferg get well soon. Please pass along my best wishes. I will. I will. There will probably be some, he says, I hope the after effects pass quickly. Me too. There will probably have to be some physical therapy involved or something along those lines, simply because,
around
here it's a diagnosis, all stoved up. Tamara writing in, I was so happy to hear your voice and about to wish you a happy new year when I heard the end of your story about the end of your year. Arrgh! And here I was feeling bad about being laid up with a cold. We're about to lose our rusty white pickup truck due to smog regulation, so I feel your pain on that level. But holy smoke, Bob, I can't imagine the rest of it. Still, I'm so happy to hear your voice, Tamara. Tamara writing from San Diego. Thank you, Tamara. And you know, this kind of stuff happens every day, and maybe I shouldn't even be talking about it. But this is, you know, this is a different kind of conversation we have here on the Horn. It's very personal, isn't it? I mean, we talk about our lives, we talk about our realities. So over the coming months, most likely, because Nationwide is not on your side, and you're not in good hands with Allsnake, and Snake Farm is not your good neighbor, you will probably hear periodic updates of Bob's battle with the insurance industry. And then there's the question of whether or not that little lizard is going to be friendly to me. Because my insurance has our insurance here has no exposure in this, unless, of course, it turns out that Speed Racer there was actually really uninsured, and just carrying a BS insurance certificate. I was not inspired, like I said. I was not suffused with a feeling of profound confidence when I found out that here, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 days after the wreck, he still hadn't reported the fact that he had done it. Yeah, just be quiet and maybe it'll go away. No. So, that's where my head has been for the last several days, and if I'm a little addled, I apologize. But I hope your old year ended better than ours did, and I hope your new year began better than ours did. Working on the cheap, I have to tell you, I tried, you know, every New Year's we have to have black eyed peas, and we have to have, I make something called Hoppin' John, and it's fairly simple. It's basically black eyed peas and onions and rice and spices and so forth. But this year, instead of just making plain white rice, I was reminded of the wonderful, wonderful dishes that I had when we went down to Sapelo Island, Georgia. And so I made low country red rice. And you can look it up online. It's really simple, but oh my God, it's good, because that gave me an excuse to use the other mandatory thing for New Year's good luck eating, which is hog jowl. Now somewhere out there, the vegetarians are going, "Oh, Bob, no! Hog jowl is wonderful. It's better than bacon any day of the week." And so I trimmed the skin off of that and used that to season the black-eyed peas. And then you slice the hog jowl and you fry it down in a skillet to render the grease out of it. This, by the way, I might add, is not a heart-healthy recipe, but it sure is good. And you saute your onion in the jowl grease. And then you turn your rice out into that and coat it real good and cook it pretty hot until it begins to turn golden, almost the way you'd begin to do a risotto. And you add a can of tomatoes and some spices and a little bit of chicken stock or water even, and let it cook down, and my God, it's good. I'd never cooked it before, but I will make it again and again and again, because it is dirt cheap and de-dadgum-licious. Darlene writing in, R.I.P. Sorry, Bob. I hope Agnes and Ferg will be okay. Don't hate me, but I own a RAV4 and love it, too. At least it wasn't me. R.I.P., rusty red truck. I know people that have RAV4s and they love them. In fact, one of my best friends was absolutely wild about his RAV4 until he totaled it 2 weeks ago. That didn't involve me. But no, I think it was supposed to crumple and go all to pieces the way that it did, because obviously the guy who was driving and slammed into my wife and kid he was cooking and got out and walked away. I guess he's got a concussion, but that's about it. Priorities. Oh my God, you guys have all, no, you've got your money. No, you've got, you know, you're keeping your priorities straight. This from Isaac. I feel for you, but look at the positive side of things. Tim Tebow was 6-for-22 and got his ass kicked. Yeah, they're going on into the playoffs. Here's the fun part. The Broncos are playing the Steelers next week. So I was going to be rooting for the Steelers anyway, but this is a double bonus. I so badly want for young Mr. Jibo to get very closely acquainted with folks like Troy Polamalu and who's the other guy I'm thinking of? Real Sackmeister. Yeah, I saw a little footage of the Denver game, and Timmy was walking around talking to himself after leaving the ball laying on the ground at least once that I saw. And Jim noting my condolences, he says, "One never knows. In the midst of living comes trauma, unexpected as well as anticipated." And that's the truth. It's a brutal way to have your priorities readjusted, but it sure does that. It sure does that. Agnes doesn't want to get in the car anytime soon. Ferg had been wanting to learn to drive, but he looked at me Friday evening and said, Dad, I don't even want to get in the car anymore. I don't want to learn to drive. I don't want to drive. And, of course, there's... I want to know what's going on with this business. There's some scary stuff going on. And, you know, you hear enlarged spleen, and you don't just say, oh, well. So there's lots of doctors to go and visit. Oh, joy. So, like I said, I'll update you periodically on that. Now, it is, though, really, really, it is Moran Monday. And beyond that simple nomination, there's stuff really going on out in the world. Had a note from Kate on the Front Range earlier, and I was reminded of this one particular story I saw today. You know, sometimes Moran Monday, I think, can be used for, counter Moran nominations? Nominations for people who go above and beyond the call of duty to prove they aren't Morans? And I'd kind of like to get things started with that, because it will warm the cockles of Kate's heart again. We've been warming the cockles of Kate's heart for a couple of days now, as I mentioned to you on Thursday. And by the way, thanks to each and every one of you who helped us finish December in the black, which we hadn't done a month finishing in the black for several months. And it was a great way to end 2011. Now, I say that this will make Kate happy because it comes from Montana, where Kate is. And frankly, I don't see political stories coming out of Montana that make me think, you know, going above and beyond the call of duty and not being a Moran or being a non-Moran very often. And this is a particularly interesting story to me insofar as it actually involves a case of a state or a political subdivision or body of a state invoking states' rights in which the invocation is not done for purposes of perpetuating flying a godforsaken Confederate flag over some stupid-ass state capital. Are you listening to me, South Carolina? Yeah, I thought. We're making sure that women can't have control of their own insides, or folks with a skin tone any darker than a Crayola flesh color can't vote. It's not that kind of states' rights. This is an actual application of the principle of states' rights that makes sense. And it's kind of a shot across the bow, so to speak. And it involves the Montana Supreme Court. A case went before the Montana Supreme Court, brought by an outfit called the Western Tradition Partnership. It's what's for dinner. No, the Western Tradition Partnership and another Montana sportsman's group, read Gun Freaks, and a local businessman. And they were suing based upon the content of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision to overturn a Montana statute dating back to 1912, it's been on the books and has not been overturned in all of that time, you know, like 100 years, 1912? Because that 1912 statute forbade corporations to spend directly on political campaigns. So far, so good, right? Well, no, because the Western Tradition Partnership wanted, and they're out of Denver, by the way, they wanted to pour lots of money into Montana political races to do whatever it is that and you get an idea what it is they wanted to do from a flyer that they sent out. There are indications that the Western Tradition Partnership is a lot slippery and kind of secretive. because it turns out that a flyer went out at one point soliciting donations for the group. Western Tradition Partnership says that they should have no limits and no accountability for any political fundraising or spending. Among other things, like I said, they sent a flyer out, a fundraising brochure, and this is a direct quote from the Western Tradition Partnership fundraising brochure. If you decide to support this program, see, you got to use your Western voice for this one. If you decide, and hang on here. It'd probably be better with a little sound effect. We'll get it here. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, this will work. There it is. This will make the quote sound so much better. Just a second. There. If you decide to support this program, no politician, no bureaucrat, and no radical environmentalist will ever know you made this program possible. The Western Tradition Partnership. Isn't that something? I mean, that's kind of brassy right out front. That's, you know, speaking to people who don't have the courage. You know, they got political convictions, but their right-wing political convictions just lack courage. Because when you see a phrase like, radical environmentalists, yeah, you kind of know you're dealing with wing nuts, don't you? If you decide to support this program, no politician, no bureaucrat, and no radical environmentalist will ever know you made this program possible. Corruption. It's what's for dinner. See, didn't it work better with the sound effects? With the music in the background? So this organization, Western Tradition Partnership out of Denver, admits that they want to operate in the dark. They want to operate under in back alleyways and in the shadows. But they want to operate in such a way as to completely pervert the electoral system and the political system, to the extent it hasn't already been perverted and corrupted, of the state of Montana. Enter the Montana Supreme Court responding to this lawsuit that the Western Tradition Partnership thought was a slam dunk. Well, I mean, we got, for heaven's sakes, I mean, we got the Citizens United decision out there. It's all about, heck, I mean, probably mail this one in. Let the first year associate handle this one. This ain't gonna take no highfalutin lawyer, and this is straight up. It's easy. Like I said, enter the Montana Supreme Court. Writing for the majority, Mike McGrath, who might even be a Republican, who is the Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, wrote, organizations like Western Tradition Partnership that act as a conduit for anonymously spending by others represent a threat to the political marketplace. Clearly, the impact of unlimited corporate donations creates a dominating impact on the political process and inevitably minimizes the impact of individual citizens. The ruling itself is 80 pages long. Now, that does not indicate that there's any greater scholarship, but it does indicate that this thing was gone at in depth. The Montana Supreme Court went to great pains in this opinion to roundly and soundly and thoroughly criticize the Citizens United decision and wound up asserting that regardless of the Citizens United decision, Montana maintains the right to protect the integrity of its electoral processes, which shadowy, slippery, sleazy right-wing groups like Western Tradition Partners, yep, subvert. Now, Justice James C. Nelson dissented to the majority opinion, but he did so with caveats, or half-heartedly, you might perhaps say. He felt like he had to follow Citizens United because it had been a Supreme Court rule. It's a Supreme Court ruling and therefore binding upon the several states. He said, while as a member of this court, I am bound to follow Citizens United, I do not have to agree with the Supreme Court's decision. And to be absolutely clear, I do not agree with it. For starters, the notion that corporations are disadvantaged in the political realm is unbelievable. Indeed, it has astounded most Americans. The truth is that corporations wield enormous power in Congress and in state legislatures. It is hard to tell where government... Oh, let's send this guy a toaster. It is hard to tell where government ends and corporate America begins. The transition is seamless and overlapping. You have to figure that in the offices of whoever was doing the lawyering for the Western Tradition Partnership, that when this decision came down, you could probably hear the hollering all the way from Denver to Helena. What the? Get that little wet behind the ears first year associate we put on this case in here, and how did he? Honest to Pete, that little punk could screw up a one-car funeral. How do you lose a... Well, the way you lose a slam dunk like this is if you have... And again, I'm out on a limb with this one because I'm just praising one decision. And it is troubling. It's a decision with which we agree, but it is troubling insofar as it relies upon states' rights. The fact of the matter is, it is the Supreme Court of the United States who screwed up so absolutely monumentally with the Citizens United decision in the first place. Leaving the Montana Supreme Court in the unenviable position of trying to figure out a way to assert its, to protect its electoral process, and yet, because basically the Montana Supreme Court just did an in-your-face slam dunk over top of the United States Supreme Court. Because it only stands to reason that the next step in this will be for the Western Tradition Partnership to go a-whine and a-bellyaching to Washington, D.C., to the Supreme Court of the United States, which is led, of course, by a filthy cadre that we refer to as the Rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, where they will bellyache and piss and moan. Oh, looky here! Looky here, justices! Looky here what they done said about you out there in Montana. They said you ain't got no right to tell us that we can't spend our money any old way we wants to. Strike 'em down, justices! Strike 'em down! Smite 'em, why don't you? Just smite 'em! Real good, smite 'em! Because, you see, there's one fundamental flaw in the Supreme Court of the United States, and it is this. It has absolutely no one overseeing it. No one is in charge. No one is in charge of the ethical probity of the individual justices. Citizens United was not decided a year ago, was not decided in a vacuum. The people who opened this hellish Pandora's box, the rats, did so because they themselves are grifted and grafted up to their chinny chin chins in the same kind of political money and ideology that drove the thinking behind the Citizens United group when they sued. But the Montana Supreme Court apparently was fairly savvy about all of this. They saw what a bunch of slippery eels they were dealing with. The Montana Supreme Court noting in that 80-page opinion that the lawyers for the Western Tradition Partnership claimed that they should be able to spend as much as they wanted whenever and wherever they wanted because they'd have to disclose that activity under Montana state law. Okay? That was their rationale. But then, the same group, using another name, see, if it was real live flesh and blood people, we would call it an alias. Using an alias, the same group filed another lawsuit to overturn the disclosure laws that the group said it would have to follow. Oh, that's a fine catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court remarked, "We take note that Western Tradition appears to be engaged in a multi-front attack on both contribution restrictions and the transparency that accompanies campaign disclosure requirements." In a footnote, the court pointed to the fact that the Montana Commissioner of Political Practices said that the Western Tradition Partnership is a sham. Their word, not mine. A sham. Because, among other things, it didn't even register with the state and refused to disclose the sources of its funds or its spending as required by law. Stunning, isn't it? And so, in ruling against these political foot pads and cut purses, these pettifogging advocates for corruption, the Montana Supreme Court very carefully parsed the Citizens United decision so as to be able to uphold Montana's own laws. By the way, that law, 1912, 100 years ago, would you care to guess why that law was put in place? Why that law was created? And it was created by a ballot initiative. The law against corporate spending in elections in Montana was passed in 1912 specifically to try to rein in the manifest abuses of, come on, it's Montana, cattle ranchers? The big war between the cattlemen and the sheepers? Uh-uh. No, that ban was passed in 1912 because in 1912, mining companies were doing in Montana what they do here in West Virginia to this very day, buying out the government. Nothing ever changes, does it? But this quote is profound. What was true a century ago is as true today. Distant corporate interests mean that corporate-dominated campaigns will only work in the essential interest of outsiders, with local interests a very secondary consideration. While specific corporate interests come and go in Montana, They are always present. So it's kind of troubling on the one hand, but the Montana Supreme Court got this right. Stephen Rosenfeld is the author of the article over at Alternet that details all of this. And in fact, there are links there to, among other things, the opinion itself. It is Western Tradition Partnership, Inc., a corporation registered in the state of Montana, and Champion Painting, Inc., a Montana corporation, Montana Shooting Sports Association, Inc., a Montana corporation, versus the Attorney General of the state of Montana and the Commissioner of the Commission for Political Practices. Like I said, it's 80 pages long, and it's a whale of a read, but it is an instructive read if you want to see how to go about legally opposing Citizens United. In many ways, I think you'll find the dissent to be the most interesting of the entire document if you go and read it. Because the dissenting judge Justice Nelson, obviously despises Citizens United and probably did as much or more to deconstruct it as the majority did. But he delivered a jeremiad against the Supreme Court's reasoning that should go down in history. He says, "While I recognize that this doctrine is firmly entrenched in law, the doctrine being that corporations are people too, while I recognize that this doctrine is firmly entrenched in law, I find the concept entirely offensive. Corporations are artificial creatures of law. As such, they should enjoy only those powers, not constitutional rights, but legislatively conferred powers that are concomitant with their legitimate function, that being limited liability investment vehicles for business. Corporations are not persons. Human beings are persons. And it is an affront to the inviolable dignity of our species that courts have created a legal fiction which forces people, human beings, to share fundamental natural rights with soulless creations of government. Worse still, while corporations and human beings share many of the same rights under the law, they clearly are not bound equally to the same codes of good conduct, decency, and morality, and they are not held equally accountable for their sins. Indeed, it is truly ironic that the death penalty and hell are reserved only to natural persons." Dang, I added the dang part. He closed his dissent, Justice Nelson did, by saying, "The Supreme Court has spoken. It has interpreted the protections of the First Amendment vis-a-vis corporate political speech. Agree with its decision or not, Montana's judiciary and elected officers are bound to accept and enforce the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling." But what's beautiful is that that was uttered in dissent. Because the majority opinion said, "The hell we do." And consequently, for at least a little while, there is a crack in the armor. A crack in the armor. Of thugs. Who seek the destruction of this country. Because Citizens United means nothing less. If there is any, if there is anyone, and you know, the right wing is so fond of trying to talk about the framers' intent and how you've got to look to the original intent of the Constitution, you can look that Constitution up, down, backwards, and sideways, and you will not find corporate personhood in it. At all. So I don't want to talk about 13 days of glory or one brief shining moment or anything, but this is instructive. I would suggest that every organization opposing Citizens United should be a proud owner of a paper hard copy, and I don't print much around here, should be the proud owner of a paper hard copy of this opinion and should share it broadly. This is a template for attacking Citizens United. And if there was ever anything in this country worth asserting states' rights over, this is certainly it. But what a damn shame that it came to that pass. That the Supreme Court of the United States is so unutterably corrupt, so wholly bought and paid for, that it cannot be counted on to get basic questions of rights right. And that, as Justice Nelson noted, the death penalty and hell are reserved to the natural people and not the corporations. So that's the beginning of Moran Monday. I've got the real Moran nominations to come after, and that's what we'll do. Of course, the phone lines are always open. That's the way this program works. And I trust you know the number by now, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you prefer to save us the cost of toll-free charges, then you can dial directly at 304-658-3333. This is a brand new year for America's listener-supported liberal voice for the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be back.
Man. And lawyers, guns, and money. the shit has hit the fan. Guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two is underway. By the way, did I mention... did I mention that the rusty red pickup truck had only been out of the shop for 2 days? Yes. did I mention that, yeah, I just finished paying a repair bill? Oh, yeah. But I say that because apparently we are not the only ones in the Horn family who have been stricken with a bit of rotten luck as the new old year ended and the new one began. Oh, no. Oh, heck no. Disaster also took a whack at Rick Smith, my esteemed colleague, up behind the scrapple curtain in Pennsylvania. And I have to say that it was of greater gravity than what happened here. I was just informed during the break that, in fact, no kidding, the station from which Rick's show was disseminated had what is technically referred to in the business as a fire. And consequently, what will be happening is, and this is actually, this is one of those making lemonade out of lemons moments. I know a lot of you can't, don't have a chance to listen to Rick after this show ends. A lot of you enjoy listening to Beloy. I can tell you it gets kind of confusing around here because I've got two separate streams going in the post 9 p.m. slot. Literally, Rick going on one stream and Mike going on the other. Well, this is you actually have an opportunity out of this disaster to listen and find out why it is that I say that Rick Smith is consistently among the very best progressive talk anywhere in this country. You have a chance to find that out for yourself here for the next several days. I'm not sure how long, but for the foreseeable future, until things can be fixed up back at the other station, Rick will be broadcasting in the 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. slot immediately ahead of me on the Horn stream. So, by all means, check out Rick Smith and just add him to the list of must-listens in your world, because he is that good. And I'm not saying this about Rick because, because we're friends or because I've worked with him for years. I'm saying that because he really is that good. And where others talk about labor and do so from the standpoint of being having sort of a philosophical agreement with it. When Rick talks about working people's issues, it's because Rick is working people. He is a card-carrying union member. And for years, that card was in his wallet. His wallet was in his hip pocket, and he was behind the wheel of a tractor trailer running all over creation. He was a union truck driver. And he has a wit that is sharp as the wet end of a whip. So treat yourself. Check out Rick Smith live on the Horn Stream from 3 to 6 p.m. for the foreseeable future until he's able to go back to his other slot. And once you've done that, I think you will begin at the very least, if you're listening to something else live between 9 and midnight, at the very least, I think you'll begin going over to White Rose and iTunes and getting his podcasts. Because I would put him up against anybody in the country. So let's hopefully this will be sort of a silver lining or a blessing in disguise. And another thing, before we move into more of Moran Monday, I again want to thank all of you for the outpouring of support that ended the year and had a lot to do with some very kind words that Mike Malloy had said. Among other things, we received a contribution in from someone that I have heard about over the years listening to Malloy's program, and that is Helen Hollers. They are, I feel a certain kinship with the concept of Helen Hollers because they're out of the mountains, the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas. And, you know, mountain folks are mountain folks. We're mountain folks because we love the wild, rugged beauty of living among them. So, do please, if you find yourself in the need of the website is Helin, Helin-Hollers, Hollers.com. Go by and give Alice a visit. She's got salves and balms and oils and essential oils, creams and soaps. And it is all just wonderful stuff, and I'm going to get some of it on hand and treat Agnes to it here in the fairly near future. It was very kind of her to contribute to the effort. And I wrote back when I saw the website attached to it and said, oh gosh, can I please just mention, and she said, sure. Because this is, somewhere along the way, we have to build a new model of what it means to keep efforts at having media that aren't utterly dominated and controlled by the 1% vigorous and afloat. And mutual support is a part of that. Like I said, I'm very grateful to all of you, and I wanted to make sure that you knew about this particular business, Helin, Helin hyphen Hollers, Hollers.com. I think you will find from Old Joe, Arkansas. I think you will find yourselves pleased by what you find there. Herbal medicinal salves, antifungals, chickweed salves. This is, I'm absolutely just intrigued by it all, and I know that Agnes will absolutely love it when I get some in. Thank you, Alice. Thank you to Healing Haulers. And go by and have a look. And have a buy. And maybe send them a note that says you heard about it here, if you haven't heard about them before. Okay? Yeah. So we begin the second hour, and Lord, the stack of Morans that I have. Breathtaking. Because to the same extent that that there was praise for the Montana Supreme Court in the previous hour, now we can move over to really, no kidding, these guys are Morans, where a court is concerned. In this particular instance, it is the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. And really, this is perfect for Moran Monday. Because Robert Jordan, who had a discrimination lawsuit before the court, was recently sent packing. And he was sent packing. The story may be a little bit old, but it stands in such direct counterpoint to what we had out of Montana that it's so instructive that you have to hold the two up in comparison. He sued for discrimination because he had applied to be a cop. He wanted a police officer. In 1996, he took the police exam, and he scored 33 points. That would have been back in, I guess he would have been, 35 years old or so when he took, he's a college graduate. He took the exam. And on the exam, he scored 33 points. And that is, on the exam, a high score because it equates roughly to an IQ of 125. Smart guy, Robert Jordan. He was trying to get a job as a police officer with New London, Connecticut. But the New London city government and its police force had a policy that said they would not interview for a job anyone who had a test score higher than 27, because if the applicant scored higher than 27 for all intents and purposes, it meant he was, or she, but in this case it was a he was too smart to be a cop. I'm not being a smart aleck here. I find this horrifying. Now, they were willing to interview people who scored 13 points lower than Mr. Jordan. If you scored a 20 on the police test, you were eligible to be interviewed. If you scored a 21, a 22, a 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. But above 27, you were too smart to be a police officer. The stated reasoning behind it was that people who score too high could get bored with police work and leave after undergoing costly training. Now, other evidence was developed in the lower court proceedings before it got to the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the evidence developed there showed that most police officers nationally score, on average, a 21 or 22 on the test. That means that on when you extrapolate that over to an IQ score, that means that the average police officer has an IQ of around 104, which is just a little bit above average intelligence on the IQ scale. So Robert Jordan sued. He felt he had been denied equal protection under the law for being smart. So the trial court found that not wanting to hire smart people because they might leave sooner was a rational basis for the policy, and the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the decision, saying that, probably. Because, and this is the editorialized portion, because in an authoritarian state, you don't want smart officers. You want officers who will do what they're told, mace whom they're told to mace, pepper spray whom they're told to pepper spray, march when they're told to march, and use truncheons when they're told to use truncheons. What a stark contrast between the Second U.S. Court of Appeals and the Montana Supreme Court. One issues a considered ruling, while the other, a couple of months back, holds that it is possible to be too smart to be a cop. I saw those two juxtaposed against each other, and it was mind-boggling. More in Monday, indeed. Email coming in. Kathy out in Arizona says, in regard to Morans, Rick Santorum is not only a Moran, but he looks like a member of the Hitler Youth too. Oh, that he does. With his little V-neck sweater vest today, it looked like he was not so much Hitler Youth as a member of the Larry King fan club. I don't do sweater vests. Hate him. Just hate him. And there are far more Morans than that in the stack this evening. But for now, we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jim.
Sorry to have to end or begin in such a traumatic way for you and your family. I hope they're okay.
I do, too. We will be doing doctor visits and consultations to make sure that they are. I don't like the words enlarged and spleen together.
No, Bob, they don't go together very well. But pursuant to your last comment about the police population,
mm-hmm.
I refer to them as the new centurions.
Oh, yeah, and a great book that was.
It was. And they don't really want people who are that intelligent or humanly creative to wear that uniform and to have that badge on their left-hand pectoral. They don't.
No, because I mean I can see where it would be a nuisance in a lot of places, but the idea that there is a bureaucratic preference for giving dangerous, deadly firearms to people with just barely average IQ and investing them with the full force of the law itself, that's kind of chilling, isn't it, Jim?
Well, I've been to a personal experience in training police officers, Bob, because in 1983, the year 1983-84, I was requested to set up a reading level test for police officers called the TABE, or the Test of Adult Basic Education, which would ascertain the reading level of police officers. And it was designed to help them better themselves academically, as well as to be able to write accurate reports and things of that nature, because a police report is a very important legal document.
Oh, it most assuredly is, as I will soon find out.
And I can tell you one thing right now. I was absolutely hated for beginning that program. Absolutely hated, and these cops or police officers or whatever you want to call them, and I'm not trying to offend any law enforcement person.
Nor I.
Have no intention of that. But they viewed me as the devil incarnate.
Because you wanted them to...
Wanted them to upgrade their literacy skills, and if there were deficiencies, you had remedial action, which they resented terribly. And I can tell you one thing, there's a certain mentality among law enforcement, and this is just my personal opinion, and maybe it's wrong, but I'll be perfectly frank with you. I have never met a policeman when I need one. It's always when I didn't need one, and the guy is there to bust your chops, give you a hard time, try to find something illegal, or to excoriate you for example, a license document that you've forgotten to sign, or an insurance certificate that you've forgotten to sign.
Sure.
And, you know, I think they just really get off on that kind of stuff. I really do.
Well, when you've got somebody who has a just barely average IQ, would we be surprised by that?
Not really, because I went through it for a year, and I had to get out of there.
Well, see, way back when I was having my cup of coffee in law school, you know, you take classes like criminal procedure and criminal law and things like that, Jim, and we got to actually see and read real-life reports of criminal investigation from West Virginia police agencies, you know, otherwise known as what you referred to, a police report. And I will stand in witness to what you just said. The literacy rate was astonishing for its lack
of literacy. I mean, all I was trying to set as a mean was eighth grade education. The same thing you're supposed to have when you do a tax return. But I'm not going to hold people to that, because I've read tax returns myself, and having been in government, I realize that that's not altogether true, because it almost takes a $200 an hour lawyer to figure out some of the tax codes. But, I mean, to be a literate police officer, one should be at least able to read at an eighth grade level.
Yes.
And if you can't, then you need to have remediation.
Well, if you can't read it in eighth grade, what do you suppose, and I don't know the answer to this, Jim, at what level do you suppose the statutes of any given state, county, or municipality are written? I'm guessing they're above eighth grade level.
Well, I would think so.
And if you can't read and comprehend those...
These people have your life in their hands.
Yeah, if you can't read and comprehend the statutes of your local, you know, of whatever it is you're enforcing, then how can you be expected to competently enforce it? On the other hand, here's a guy with a good IQ who actually wanted to be a police officer and was turned down for being far too intelligent.
God, I can't imagine why he would want to get into that profession, realizing the type of people he would have to work with. And here again, I guess I'm casting disparaging remarks, but I'm not trying to do so with malice, but just from experience. And I've worked with soldiers and people like that, and, you know, I found the soldiers to be a lot easier and a lot more pliable and a lot more desirous of improving themselves in order that they can progress to their career tracks. But not police officers. They just simply... are totally intransigent about this sort of thing. At least they were.
Well, it's like...
I'll tell you, when my coattail did, I hit my ass after I set that program up for them. And I said, good luck, so long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen. I'm heading over the border for Switzerland with the Von Trapps.
Climb every mountain, Jim.
Well, it was ridiculous. I mean, some of these guys were just... well, they didn't like it, and they felt as it was some type of threat to their... Oh, they have a tremendous ego, and whenever you crack the barriers of someone's ego, you got a problem. And when it's a police officer or someone who is in some...
Yeah, when it's the ego of someone who has a gun...
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, these people are licensed to shoulder and carry a sidearm, and God only knows whatever they have in the boot of their car. I mean, they need to be responsible. They need to be able to think actively, creatively, and also not to be just some type of automaton or some good old boy who happens to have his job because his uncle knows so-and-so.
Right, because, you know, Uncle Cletus down to the water office, he... Right.
I think you know where I'm coming on that.
Oh, I absolutely do. And the thing is that you know, this is another one of those stories that has legs, so to speak, Jim. That because if you take that statement that the national average for a police officer is just above average intelligence, IQ of 104, and then now that's the average. So that means that there are people operating with guns and powerful automobiles and chemical weapons and shotguns in the trunk, like you said, who have IQs below average.
Well, I mean, when you have a conversation with these people, you're afraid to use any word above that has more than three or four consonants or syllables, afraid you might incur his wrath and he might either have the cuffs on you or doing all kinds of things, thinking you're trying to be smart.
Well, Jim, I told you I got to review some police reports in law school. I learned a new word, and it's some sort of participial version of the verb to take. And the word, Jim, and you know, you are a devotee of the language, as am I. The word is token.
Token.
Token. As in, I have taken my grandmother to the grocery store.
Oh, I thought you were talking about token, T-O-K-E-N.
No, T-O-O-K-E-N, token.
I like a subway token. Go ahead.
No, I have, tomorrow I will have taken my grandmother to the grocery store.
Will have...
Token.
Wow, I never learned that.
It's not taken, it's token.
Where did that come from?
Up some holler somewhere. Tooken.
Oh, dear God. I'm afraid that type of language comes from more than just hollers. It comes from flatlands and places like that, too.
I have never heard nor seen the word tooken.
I have tooken.
And it can also be used without that the past, without the helping verb. I tooken. That's the nice thing about using the English language with no rules. You can pretty much do with it as you please.
Well, I mean, you know, I watch the Imus program a lot, and he has that guy named Bo Deedle. You ever heard of Bo Deedle?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One Tough Cop, that book he wrote. And talk about taking liberties with language and stuff like that and creating words. Good Lord in heaven. He could list a whole dictionary. I mean, it's while the guy has some good intentions, and I think basically a decent heart, he frightens me.
Well, in the case of the reports that we were reviewing there in the law school, they were passed around. You know, it was not done as any form of mockery or anything like that, Jim. But what was said when it was passed around was, read these, and understand that if you are practicing law and you have any sort of interaction with law enforcement, this is what you will deal with.
Unfortunately, I've had the same experience, Bob. I know exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, I'm not trying to demean people like that who are less well-educated than I and who don't have the command of the language than I or the appreciation for it than I. But if you're going to hold that job, then you must be upheld to certain standards. And if you can't be upheld to those standards, then perhaps you should be doing something else, unless you're willing to say, look, I need to be improved, or I need to improve, and I need to rise to the occasion demanded by my profession. But that seems to be going by the by with a lot of professions these days, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I try, you know, I try to maintain some level of perspective on it, Jim, because, for instance, if you go around the internets much, you'll find that there are people who are referred to as spelling Nazis and word Nazis and grammar Nazis out there who, when losing an argument, will leap on a misspell and say, well, see, that proves you're illiterate. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know. I mean, Joe, and I've listened to the podcast, and I've realized that I have lost command of the language myself, and, you know, just in the, I guess, in the heat of conversation.
But by the, and something we seldom realize is that the standardization of English grammar and English spelling is a fairly recent vintage. For instance, if you look, you know, if you go back and look at old folios of Shakespeare, if you look at letters written by people who were considered the geniuses who founded this nation, the spellings are quaint, to say the least, and that's because all spellings were equal. The idea of a standardized spelling is, like I said, fairly new. It only comes along with the promulgation of dictionaries and the ability of ordinary people to have dictionaries and the incorporation of grammars and spellers into curricula. And that's, you know, that's only the at tops, that's the late 19th century, and it's kind of a mind-boggler to consider.
Yes, it is.
So I try, you know, on the one hand, you want to say, well, you know, it's fairly novel, the idea of having a sort of orthodoxy of spelling.
Well, in addition to spelling, you have grammar too, and you know, I've noticed even on the national news and on programs like on the History Channel and stuff like that, you'll find people there who are supposedly very literate and very well educated. They don't know the difference between a nominative and an objective pronoun. I just sit there and listen for stuff like this, and I guess I'm one of those grammatical Nazis too when I listen, because, you know, I turn on these programs because I want you to learn from these people.
I know.
And, you know, it's awfully hard for me to accept what they're saying if they can't speak the language properly.
And it is disturbing when you see it working its way over into those whose task is supposed to be the professional production of language. I was at the CNN website a week or so ago, and there's one phrase that's out there, and I think we've discussed it in the past, and there's even a really funny British guy opining on it, and I think I ran that once upon a time, too. But there is a phrase that has entered. And it's not a malapropism and it's not a neologism, but what it is it's a statement that isn't what it purports to be. Because I'm sure growing up, you heard people, as did I, as have many others, say, I couldn't care less about it. Which is, of course, a manifestation of not caring at all about something.
Or in my case, basically, it was always, I could not be bothered.
Right. What has changed, and I find it culturally fascinating to find out how this happens, how one mistake is just multiplied to the point that it becomes the norm. in reading this CNN story, and it was about some application for a smartphone that you can look at the stars with, and it'll tell you what part of the sky you're looking at and what the constellations are and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it said, this app is great for those who love astronomy and for those who could care less about it. And the phrase is, of course, who couldn't care less, because the cliche is meant to convey that someone does not care at all, that they are at some base minimum level of not caring. But when we say could care less, it means that they do care. But I would say that 9 times out of 10, when you hear that cliche used in English now, you will hear it, Jim, as I could care less. But it's understood by people to mean that they don't care. And it drives me nuts. There's another one out there, a word, and I think this is probably indicative of the fact that I need mental health help, because it's like fingernails across a chalkboard to me. And that is the word predominantly. Predominantly.
Oh, yes.
Predominantly. It is now spoken and spelled predominantly. Predominantely. And when I see it or hear it, it practically makes me want to kick furniture.
Yeah.
And like I said, probably means I need a pill.
No. I think it's basically in contravention of how you think your language should be used. And unfortunately, language is being abused, and I don't know. But anyway, I need to get off here, but I want to add one more thing to it, and I will get off after having done so. I sent you an email about New Year's Eve.
Yes. I didn't see that, but...
I could not believe it. And for those of you who did not, that was Anderson Cooper. And I like Anderson Cooper. I mean, you may not like him, but I do.
Oh, I like him well enough. I mean...
I think the guy's doing a good job, and he doesn't have to be in that kind of thing and be in those situations. I mean, God, his mother's Gloria Vanderbilt. And, you know, he has family money, and he could certainly be, you know, cruising the Mediterranean and living the lifestyle of a king if he wanted to. But I have a lot of respect for him. But when that woman, that comedian, I can't even remember her.
Kathy Griffin.
Who's that?
Kathy Griffin,
yeah. Ask him if he had a yeast infection. I couldn't believe it.
But it's like I wrote back to you. They pay her to be outrageous. And I guess that passes for outrageous.
I can understand being in Times Square and having a good time on New Year's Eve. God knows I've done it myself on several occasions. But not on national television. And then, to compound that, strip off to a bra and panties that look like something from Lily Sancier or Fredericks of Hollywood, and not having a whole lot to show in the first place, and hair that looked like it had been done by a Van de Graaff generator, I thought to myself, what in the world?
You know, Jim, that's another one of those moments for you, because I can say with 100% certainty that there will not be another talk radio program out there in the known universe where Van de Graaff generator will be used in a sentence. You're going to get fan mail for Van de Graaff generator.
She had 500,000 volts going through whatever she was standing on. I don't know. I was just totally gobsmacked or whatever. Excuse me. There I go.
Well, no, I mean, it was New Year's Eve. You may have been gobsmacked.
I was. I mean, I had a couple, and I was enjoying the show and stuff like that. But, I mean, for a woman to get up there and to strip off as though she were doing some type of cheap lingerie commercial, and to think that was funny. And, you know, I applaud Anderson Cooper for his aplomb and his ability to deal with it.
I tuned into ABC because, and I'm not meaning to seem awful or hateful about this, and I guess it's the only time of year they let him out in public now, but Dick Clark is just sad.
He's gone past his prime, and, you know, there comes a time when all things must come to an end. And he's not doing American Bandstand anymore. He doesn't look the way he used to. And sometimes it's
I mean, he's battled back from a stroke, and I get that, and I applaud it. It takes courage to deal with that kind of horror, and you know, to still be alive inside a body that refuses to cooperate with you any longer. I don't want to imagine it. But, and this is very shallow on my part, and I admit it, and, you know, I would ask people not to bother with the hate mail. New Year's Eve is, you know, fun, and you know, we're New Year's rockin' Eve, and now we're gonna hear from Lady Antibacterial, or whatever the name of that band is, and,
excuse me.
They roll out Dick Clark like Captain Christopher Pike.
Oh, Lord.
And it's just... Because we were watching the countdown, and there he... And I just thought, no, this is not how you ring in a new year.
It's very sad.
It is. It's who wants to ring it in sad?
I mean, because there are enough sad things predicted for 2012, and you certainly don't need to have it brought in like that. And you know, this guy at one time did very well, was very photogenic, telegenic, but you know, Bob, there are times when you have to retire and leave the stage or leave the party. And I've always found that the best time to leave any party is when that party is at its height.
Yes.
Not when it's ending and you know, people are trying to tell you to go home. And on that note, I'm going to give up this mic and let you talk to some of your other friends. But all my best to you and your family for the best new year possible. And sorry about the incident they had, and I hope they recover quickly.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Very happy new year to you, too.
Well, thank you. And to all of you who are within the sound of my voice.
All right. Take care, Jim.
Night.
Bye. I didn't see the incident that Jim was talking about with Kathy Griffin just because... Being professionally outrageous, I mean, it's like, Glenn Beck, once upon a time in his burgeoning radio career, Glenn Beck was professionally outrageous, and I guess he still is. That's why he says things like he'd like to paint a target on Nancy Pelosi's head, or he'd like to strangle Michael Moore with his bare hands and things. That's outrage for outrage's sake, and it's the sign of a culture that is no longer able to process information on a more normal or normative basis. So I didn't see that, but I did see them. I saw them just sort of trot out Dick Clark, and he was a hell of a hard worker for a long, long time. But they got the tux on him, and he had the teleprompter to read, and he was struggling through the after effects of that awful stroke that he had. And it's just time. Well, he's not like Pat Robertson. I don't think he's necessarily a candidate for Sandra's go to glory list or anything, but bring in somebody. Don't make me, okay, really shallow. Don't make me uncomfortable on New Year's Eve, because no good comes of that. All the drunks are looking going, is he talking funny or am I that drunk? And the rest of us are just going, oh God, please. But then again, bearing in mind that no good really comes of New Year's Eve, because New Year's Eve is what my good old buddy who, he's the one who says, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm a drunk. I don't mean talking about me, but he's talking about himself. He refuses to go out anywhere on New Year's Eve. He says, I'm staying home. This is amateur night. And really, Jim mentioned that, yeah, he's done a couple of Times Square New Year's Eve, and I was wondering what it would be like to do, because you'd kind of have to be young, wouldn't you? That's not to say that I'm ancient or anything, but I remember college and going to the meat market discos and stuff, and you know, where you're all packed in like sardines. Hey, baby, what's your sign? Aren't you in my advanced light class? And it was, you know, if it weren't for the fact that one was desperately trying to not go home alone that night, you wouldn't be there. But I have no patience for it anymore. So New Year's Eve, insofar as it had come on the heels of the great traffic crack-up of December 30th, 2011, was a quiet affair around here. So, well, okay. Will noting in the chat room, we call it amateur night here, too. Okay, so that's not the... That's not exclusive. Yeah, but it will. Yeah, Will's in the same place. As I'm in my 40s, I'm not sure I would want to be cold in a crowd of strangers. Right. Yeah. Now, I don't know. New Year's Eve, according to the photos I got from Robert, looked like it was pretty fun in Sydney, and considerably better weather. I'm finding a lot to like about Australia these days. Too bad they don't want me. Let's go to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, God. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Sandra.
Listen, I wasn't even going to call until, and you know where I'm going because, yeah, I am that shallow. Are you kidding me? I didn't even watch that. Dick Clark? No, listen.
Yes.
I know, the cringing.
I mean, I was surprised.
No, listen, the cringing was even starting, you know, before, when you were talking about it, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I thought it was Ryan Seacrest. I thought he had... taken over the helm, you know.
Well, he did, but they at the end they, you know, trot out Captain Pike.
No, I know, and the thing is that it was too much when he first had the stroke. I was like, oh my God, but then he came back and it was hideously painful. Then that was years ago. They're still bringing him out.
I was surprised. I was like, no, really?
Oh, no way. I mean, like I said, I haven't watched it. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, the last time I watched it was when that guy came out post-stroke. I was like, okay, that's enough for me. I can't cope. And then I'd forgotten about it, assuming that he had retired, and that was it. But you're telling me they still doing it a la... Captain Pike, you gotta be kidding me.
And you know, bless his heart, he was struggling to get the words out, and he did a pretty good job of it.
But, yeah, I understand, but as you said...
But who's making that decision? I mean, does he own Disney or something?
That's what I'm saying, because I don't really understand, because it's borderline kind of like a zoo / cruel to have him doing that. And plus... It's really, you know, uncomfortable just as a, you know, a viewer of millions, I guess. I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is a bit special. You know, someone should put a stop to it. That's not right. I swear, something's wrong there. I don't understand why. It's like even Regis knows when to go. He's gone. You understand?
And you know, it's interesting that you phrase that, Sandra, in that way. Even Regis knows when it's time to go. So I guess Regis is now the benchmark for going out classy.
Well, I don't. You know, I stopped watching that after Kathy leaves because I was like, oh, they gonna do her like that? Because I mean, I have to admit, I found her funny because she was so horrible. It was great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was just glad. I'm just glad that the Elizabeth Hasselbeck hasn't figured out a way to glom into that thing yet.
Oh no, I mean, I don't have any problems with Kelly. I mean, you know, who can dislike Kelly Ripa? What's wrong with nothing wrong with her?
Right.
But when he left, he did leave. You know, I mean, same thing with. It was hard. They had to drag him away. But Larry King, he left. But this man is still, wow. I'm sorry, I'm in a state of shock because, you know.
Well, I was trying not to be ugly, but there's something disturbing about the fact that Disney owns ABC, and I'm afraid that they've got him, he's like some sort of animatronic now.
Exactly. No, I'm just thinking about, you know, what is the contractual arrangement there? And, I mean, it's weird considering how, in this society, you know, we seem to be so into, youth and vigor at every stage, yet this persists. I don't know. It's just kind of odd.
And, you know, it's not like he was on there for a long time.
Well, no, but the thing is, we understand that Dick Clark sort of did this since whatever, 1950, like, I don't know how long, it's been a while. But it, when things end, they end. I mean, it's no shame in retiring.
But then again, remember, they kept Guy Lombardo out there waving the baton until he couldn't wave it no more.
What do you mean? See,
okay, Guy Lombardo was the guy who made Auld Lang Syne popular.
No, I understand, but... Oh, okay. So they had him.
Oh yeah, I mean he up till the very bitter end. That, you know, New Year's Eve was his gig.
Well, you remember another person that said, "Oh, okay, well, you know, bye bye." Was Johnny Carson? And remember how people were just, oh, they couldn't believe the dude left. And I was like, "Well, shit, goodbye, have a good time," which is what he did, I guess.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not like he didn't earn it.
Well, no, but it was just kind of weird. It's like people were all the sort of, you know, hand-wringing and wailing. It's like, oh, my God, enough already with it, you know. It was his decision, so. But and on the other hand, though, you have Dick Clark, who I guess maybe has some sort of contract where he can do it until he is dirt nap. I mean, I don't know, because I was so shocked when you said that, because I was thinking there's no way Dick Clark is still doing it. Because I'll never watch it, because I can't look at that Brian Seacrest, because he makes like $45-50 million a year, and you know, I can't even put my eye on him at all, because no one, he doesn't deserve that amount of money, and there's no way I'm going to look at
him. He's a mystery to me.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't want to understand it, so I don't even.
Yeah, I think that may be it, Sandra. I don't want to.
I check out anytime he comes up in any form, because I just am horrified that some market somewhere is bearing that cost, so it can do it without me. But for Dick Clark to still be there, oh boy, you try to have a couple of sips, maybe a puff, and you turn on TV, I'm sorry,
Right, and all of a sudden it's, you know, you got to put the arson down or put the puffer out, and because
hide the kids, hide your wife.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I'm pulling the nieces away from the TV because you want to start to...
Don't look, baby. Don't look.
I don't want to be traumatized. And I know we just sound horrible, you know, because I'm not, you know, I mean...
No, but rest assured, there's no way, you know, I'm not in the same league, and it's not the same kind of money thing, but I want to think that I've got enough, you know, dignity to...
That's the word we're looking for.
Yeah, oh, okay. Here comes Isaac with a little... Okay, this explains it all.
Oh, no. Am I going to regret this conversation?
Okay, Dick Clark ahead. Productions owns that show. That's why we're stuck with that monster voice that was a buzzkill for me.
Oh, shit. But at least we're not the only heartless people out there.
No, I got a feeling that, you know, between you, me, and Isaac, we're expressing things for a lot of people.
Well, it's just kind of, yeah. Well, anyway, like I said, I didn't, you know, I missed that spectacle, but wow, you know.
But how far till
humanity
and the captain and the Captain Pike reference is working for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's why I called. You cannot get away with that.
Cindy up in Washington just wrote in, said, "Too funny. I love Sandra." And made reference to, click here to see the original Captain Pike. And that's, you know, that was just the sense I got with Dick Clark, was that, and this is kind of a Moran Monday nomination to, you know, to ABC or Dick Clark Productions or whatever. You know, let's not wait until you're rolling him out and he's blinking once for yes and two for no.
Listen, I can't even, wow. Yeah, because I just, you know, I don't even need to click on to see it. It's like ingrained in my mind that whole episode. Are you kidding me? Oh.
It's just... And I did, even as I was watching it. You know, I got the email from Jim about Kathy Griffin, and I'm just... I mean, I'm glad I wasn't there for that one.
Oh, that sounds horrific, too.
And Dick Clark is... let's see. Yeah, he was born November 30th, 1929.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
So, you know, had a good run. You know, cue up Sinatra or Elvis singing My Way, and you know.
Wow. Oh, see, now we enter into the Twilight Zone. What? No way. That's okay. It's time, dude. Damn.
Yeah. Goodbye now.
And so I was having an image of you right there. You just la la la, you know, chilling, watching that, and then that pops up, Captain Pike.
Yeah, because you know, I've been cruising along. You know, I'm Sam Shallow. I've been cruising along watching a football game. It was, you know, it was New Year's Eve, and there was some ball on, and then you know, okay, so yeah. The ball's about to drop, and then there's, you know, we can have that whole conversation about why we use a male puberty reference to indicate the changing of the year.
Right.
So we click, and there he is.
God.
And I'm not gonna do some verbal approximation of what I heard. I'm trying to maintain that, you know, even I have standards, Sam.
Well, no, you don't want to drift into the, you know, Rush Limbaugh territory, no.
And it had, I'm not going to do the Michael J. Fox jiggle or anything. Jesus, that sick bastard.
Well, listen, it isn't so, I mean, yeah.
Is it too early to put Rush on the go to glory list?
Oh, no, that dude should be in the top two, for real. Cheney than him, or switch it, don't matter.
Same.
Yeah. Anyway, though, but see, once again, as horrible as we may sound out there, I don't really care because Dick Clark is one of them. He's just famous, and he don't mean nothing to me, so I don't care. You see what I'm saying?
Well, and that's the whole thing, you know.
It's like, who cares? I'm just saying, if you don't.
He didn't, you know, Saturday night, he didn't have a good beat, and you couldn't dance to him.
Well, you know, it wasn't like he was bringing the niggrits and the whites together. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
A little dancey poo.
Oh, God.
Anyway, listen, I mean, he has such a long history. Dick, and now that I know he was born in the damn 20s, I understand why.
Yeah, he's, you know, like 82. I guess he just turned
83.
Yeah.
He'll be
83 this year or something. Yeah.
83 this year, yeah. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, yeah.
Beep.
That's too much. I mean, especially, well, I don't know.
But, you know, I was hoping to get a chance to talk to you because, you know, you're out in the market where you probably got to see it. Did you catch, what's his name, Hugh, the head coach of the Raiders? Dude was pissed.
Hugh Jackson?
Yeah.
No, you know, I have not been able to check out anything at all. I mean, what happened?
Well, I mean, the Raiders had a chance to, you know, the Broncos, little Timmy had a performance for the ages.
Well, yeah, so they're done, right?
No, because the Raiders.
Oh, because the Raiders lost?
Yeah, because the Raiders choked to the Chargers, whom they had already beaten once.
Right, no, I heard, I was listening to that game when I was
The Raiders stay home, and the Broncos play, this is so much fun, it's almost worth seeing them in the playoffs, the Broncos play the Steelers next week.
Oh, shoot. Fantastic. Well, anyway, what was Jackson doing?
Oh, his press conference, he said, I just don't know what's going on with this team. He said, you've got a chance to wrap it up, and you don't. And he was not pulling any punches in the post game press conference. He was pissed.
Well, especially in the fashion that they won last week. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a shame. I know, and especially with the this year's Charger team. I mean, they're not bringing their A game. So it was a real.
Well, the whole AFC West. You know, it was a matter of who was going to reluctantly back into first place.
Well, yeah, you know, and so. Yeah, it's kind of too bad because he's one of the more interesting coaches out there. So
well, I don't think his job's in any jeopardy.
He's done a lot. Shit, he had that sort of that one quarterback break a collarbone or whatever happened to him and replaced it with this has been. And I mean, he has had to work with a lot.
Yeah. Now, what's going to be interesting? Everybody, I guess all eyes are on San Diego to see how long it takes to fire Norv Turner.
No, he has to go. Please tell me that that fool ain't around again.
Well, I checked in with one of my sources, namely David in Tennessee.
Right.
And he says the smart money is that Jeff, the former coach of the Titans, will wind up at San Diego.
Because that's I know that's Spanos. I mean, there's all sorts of issues about even the viability of the team remaining in San Diego and all that madness, you know. So it'd be interesting to see what shakes out with that. But, you know, maybe Philip Rivers is having problems with his 12-year-old bride, or, well, when they met.
Jesus, yeah. Jeff Fisher. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Okay. Right. Well, so Timmy, so he got, still has a chance.
Oh, he was talking to himself. I mean, there was one, he tried to go wide to the left, taking the ball, and Swift little linebacker or cornerback or whatever went out there, slobber knocked him, knocked the ball loose. Timmy wound up about 10 yards away from where he left the football and got up muttering to himself.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you could see him talking to himself. I'm thinking he wasn't saying our God is an awesome God and he reigns from a righteous place on high or whatever.
Probably was wondering why he abandoned him in his hour of need or some madness like that.
But he gets to go on. But what kind of an incentive? Yeah, he was six for something. It was just terrible, obnoxious numbers, and it was, yeah.
The Steelers.
Yeah, he was 6 for 22, Sandra.
Oh no, I mean, yeah, I know his whole sort of routine is real suspect. So, and they're playing the Steelers. That's the last game for him, right?
Yeah, and the guy I was trying to think about earlier, James Harrison. You know, dude has a reputation for being cruel to quarterbacks.
Well, yeah, he's the one always wondering, who, me? Why are you finding me? Yeah, after he damn near murdered somebody. Looking around, what? Who?
Yeah, this would be the time for that, James.
Oh, we are so wrong. But listen, that's funny. That's a good one. I mean, the thing is, though, how's the rapist playing? Is he still got a sprained ankle?
I think he came in. He was in during the Browns game. But he'll be out there and firing on all cylinders come next week.
Well, it's so funny how football is really, really like, you know, what it must have been like in the Roman time. We got rapists, murderers, you know.
Yeah, yeah, because Ray's in the playoffs too.
I thought he was done. I thought he was hurt. He's back, huh?
Is he? Okay, maybe
he's been kind of iffy for, you know. I mean, I thought he was kind of, you know, injured, but.
But the other Ray that is a joy to watch, Ray Rice, is a hell of a back.
What about the dog killer? Is he? I mean, cause I know Philadelphia, they've been winning. No, they're done.
I think they're done. Yeah, they're done.
They're done. Okay.
Yeah, the Dream Team.
Yeah, they didn't. They got beat. Cause I stopped following it.
Yeah, they're done. It's New Orleans is New Orleans and Atlanta are in, and the Lions are in. And
yeah, I know the Lions,
the Giants, the Packers, and the Niners. So.
Oh God!
Because
no.
I'm sure I'll piss somebody off, but it was a real joy watching the Cowboys choke last night.
Oh, of course. I don't. You know. Yeah. No. I think that they're. You know. It's like done. Wrap it up.
Yeah, because see, Jerry Jones is on the glory list.
Oh shit. He gonna have to run to his
and you know they of course interviewed him. Well, I don't know. I just wonder about the dedication of this team. I'll have to look at something here. And you know when you build a monument to yourself on taxpayer dollars,
well,
even though it's Texas,
too.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you know I never forget that it is Dallas. It is Texas. And consequently, that stadium has the biggest, as we've discussed in the past, has the biggest on-site prison of any NFL facility.
Well, that just is incredible.
Yeah, because it's well, they just and as badly as the Cowboys have played, you know, it's probably already filled the capacity, and there are inmate suits being filed with the Supreme Court as we speak.
Probably farming them out for labor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I'm sure this is not a place where he don't try to earn money. Might as well do it there, too.
Oh, and a little backgrounder coming from Tim in L.A. He said, it's sad to see Dick Clark the way he is, but have you seen him on Roger and Me? He told Michael Moore and the people of Michigan to F off as he drove off in his limo.
Wow.
Tim notes, there is a Japanese word for people like Clark, and that's bachi, or punishment you deserve.
Well, listen.
So we're not the meanest people in the crowd by any stretch of the imagination.
We're being punished, you know, by having to look at it if you happen to stumble upon the ball falling.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's the... I didn't know that about... Roger and Me?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, stories always come out about these people. Why are we surprised?
Well, not at all. I mean...
Exactly.
I'm Dick Clark. I'm Dick Clark, damn it.
Well, I thought it was interesting that we have to be, you know, happy with Obama because he signed some signing statement saying, oh, well, we don't, you know, basically don't want to lock up Americans. It's like, oh, gee, thanks.
Well, you know, yeah, and you know what?
It's like malevolent dick, you know, it's like you're still a dictator, dude. You know, it's like the power that you can use is what makes an authority.
Yeah, as I read all of that foo-frah flying out of that, and I read the presidential signing statement, the thing that came to mind for me was, well, okay, great, I'll take you at your word, Mr. President, that you won't tolerate that. But this thing is now in play for future presidents.
Well, yeah, no. I'm
anybody out there think President Paul wouldn't? President Bachman? President Romney? President Newton Leroy Gingrich in his big old head? Because I do.
It's the right to use it. You know what I'm saying?
Precisely.
It's right there. And it's really scary because, you know, Mr. Obama's already, you know, assassinated a couple of Americans and children. So, you know, I'm not going to forget that. I don't care how many, you know, angry black women or whoever else is going to be flipping out about it. It's a fact.
Yeah, but by the same token, Glenn Greenwald did kind of step in it.
Oh, no. That was, like, beyond stupid. But I'm thinking it's still a sideshow to me. I don't care.
Well, it is.
If progressives want to argue amongst themselves, which is what we always do, I'm looking at that thinking, oh, dear God. But in the meanwhile, this law is all the ready for when, if the financial thing does blow up, everything's in place to snatch us up. If we dare make a noise.
And one of the salient points that has been made, Sandra, is that it was the whole damn thing was started by a reactionary Congress. And anybody that doesn't think that the reactionaries and radicals in Congress wouldn't like to build on that little pile of crap, well,
it's been built on from the page. You know, people with any sense who was ringing the alarms and freaking out over the Patriot Act were absolutely right.
Yes,
because look where we're on. Look where we are now. And I was just sort of making, because I just was noticing that whole little exchange going on.
Oh God, I saw it blowing through.
Like, oh my God, you know. And I'm thinking, well, on the one hand, yeah, no, it's. But, you know, you might get more followers. No, you know me. I'm so jaded.
No, well, I am too, and that's why I can't. That's why I'm not going to fulminate on one side or the other of this thing, because it seems to have been designed precisely for fulmination.
Yeah, it's sort of like I said, I can never take any of it that seriously because nothing ever changes outside of the, you know, analysis and hand-wringing. And in the meanwhile, you know, drones are being turned on us domestically. And laws are being codified to contain the coming Mad Max episode that we're about to enter. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And you know what? I've got an example of that here. This may involve just a little bit of audio, Sandra. And it's on the silly side of things.
But if you see these silly things, you think, well, these people are actually, you know, if they're willing to devote time and energy to this, they're damn sure willing to devote time and energy to more serious crackdowns. About a year ago, a lovely young lady in Indiana, you know this is not going to end well, just because it's Indiana.
Right.
Was singing the national anthem before some basketball games. Of course, the state of Indiana loses all sense of perspective and rationality and reason over basketball, and, you know, I'm okay with that. I share a border with Kentucky. Those people lose their minds this time of year over basketball. So the young lady was singing the national anthem, and this is what she sang, Sandra, okay? Now, she's singing a cappella, and just listen. Okay, you got a sense for it there?
Yeah.
Okay. Her name is Shy Warfield Cross. She was 16 years old at the time. She performed the national anthem at Bloomington High School North, no problem. But then a school official said they got complaints about her performance during a game in Martinsville, Indiana. Principal Jeff Henderson said people complained that while the words to the anthem were the same, the tune was unrecognizable. So now, a year later, a Republican member of the Indiana legislature has introduced a bill that would make it a crime to stray, this is the text of the article, make it a crime to stray from approved lyrical or melodic guidelines while performing the national anthem. Because, you know, Shy Warfield Cross sang it too black. Because the white people in Martinsville, Indiana said they recognized the words, but they couldn't, it wasn't the right tune. I'm not kidding.
Oh my God.
The legislation requires that anyone performing the national anthem in the state of Indiana has to sign a contract before doing so, stating that they would follow guidelines established by the State Department of Education for singing the national anthem, and if they got it wrong, they would be fined $25 and convicted.
So I suppose you can't mix in no kind of beatbox in between.
Yeah, sorry, no, and God forbid maybe she holds up the one fist or something while doing it, because no, that's Mexico City all over again. But my point is, this is the kind of stuff. Really, this is the kind of stuff that fascist dictatorships do.
Well, yeah, that's what I, yeah, no, that, it's just, it's another example. It's like, I'm not going to say that the Patriot Act is equivalent to the Enabling Act, but it's under these sort of, quote, emergency powers that we're drifting to. And, you know, I just can't believe that this whole, national, whatever it is, the NDAA, isn't getting any media coverage, or it's confirming what we all think the media is and has become. You know what I mean? Because the Bill of Rights basically are over, all right?
And I agree wholeheartedly. But the problem is that and maybe it's generational, Sandra, but they've been over for a while.
Oh no!
But we sort of teetered along on this in this charade that they really existed. I mean, go back to U.S. versus Leon and the dissent of Justice, Brennan.
Well, no, but they barely got the light of day, and the door is being slammed. You see what I mean? If you look at, I don't know, I just, you know, it's just really disturbing because there's so many things in place to just turn this into a dystopia. I know that word is used a lot, but did you happen to look at the Adam Curtis film, I think?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, the way that ended, I was just like, oh, Jesus. Because, see, that's my whole contention about this level horizontal network bullshit that we're being fed about the internet. You understand what I'm saying? Network my ass, horizontal my ass, okay?
No, there are people in charge. No, there are there are corporations in charge of it, and they're not going to turn loose of it. And we've got a government that's
buying into this sort of, you know, oh, we can do this, that, or another with it. And you know, I'm as upset about SOPA as the next person. But on the other hand, the sun will rise the next day.
Yeah, it will.
You know,
and it will rise on a. On a state that is decidedly more corporatist, more fascist, right?
Right. I mean, but it's just anyway. I'm a big fan of Adam Curtis. Anyway, I don't know where that man finds the footage. It's awesome just looking at.
Well, just to track the rise of Rupert Murdoch, and you know, were his conclusions about what Murdoch's goals were. I mean, is that established, or, I mean, was that really his operating philosophy to be the great leveler in the UK?
Well, I don't really know. I'm looking at that maybe from the point of view of him being Australian and not British, so there could be a natural antagonism towards that, the institutions there. I don't doubt that, but... You know, he's replacing it with one that's just as insidious. You know, the whole Thatcher social mobility meme is the same kind of thing. You know, it's fighting against the sort of British rigid hierarchy, but with Thatcher, it was, you know, market fundamentalism is a.
But I found it fascinating that he talked about how, you know, in leveling the celebrities and showing them as having problems and yada. That's what gave us the rise of celebrity journalism, so to speak. And it caused me to reflect back upon the early days of CNN, for instance, because Ted Turner did invent the 24-hour news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And they told him when he said he was going to launch an all-news, all-the-time channel that he was crazy, it would never fly, nobody would be interested in it. And they did manage to fill, and you know, I was there in the radio division in the fair, you know, eight years after it opened or whatever. And it was working. But at that time, and I think this is telling, at that time, there was 1 hour a day on the main CNN programming schedule of entertainment news. CNN's Hollywood Tonight, I think is what it was called. And it was 1 hour. It was hosted by Bill Tush, and it was this celebrity and that celebrity, blah, blah, blah. And in a short span of time, it just exploded until the vast majority of what CNN was doing and all the other 24-hour news cycle programs were doing, it exploded into the main thrust was delivering, delivering that kind of celebrity gossip stuff that... He makes the assertion that basically Murdoch put into play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that with Murdoch, everything is sort of justification for him clocking more dollars. But if he seems to think that the general public looking at the suffering of celebrities will make everyone feel better, you know, I can't put myself in that position because. You know, I could give a flying F about celebrities, so, you know, that doesn't do a thing for me. But I suppose it sells because he's a billionaire over and over, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And that's what marks you, me, the rest of the Horn family, is, I guess, a little bit out of step because, well, we're not interested in it.
Thing. I'm way out of step because that's like that has nothing for me. I you know, if celebrity, the whole idea of celebrity disappeared tomorrow, that would be falling into the sun will still rise. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
I could care less. But, you know, if you're dealing with such a rigid class structure as England, you know, I suppose, I don't know. I mean, we have our own rigid lack of social mobility here, but it's more economic, isn't it?
Well, it's economic, and it's they try to keep it.
And they lie.
They try to keep it under wraps, and they create this myth that, you know, you're just one Powerball ticket away from joining the 15% class.
Well, yeah, and that was the whole problem with America right now is that whole thing is unraveling, you know, rapidly. So we get back to this NDAA business.
Yeah, and
I know I keep harping on it, but I don't believe the fear of security is the real underlying thing with this. I think it's going to be turned against a country of 330 million when the shit hits the fan. Why else do you put apparatus like that in place? We've lived through far worse than what's going on now, and you know, I didn't see the government completely shut.
No.
Now that's the thing. It's just sort of like,
well, and the other part of the for those who were issuing various forms of apologetics for signing this thing, the other thing that the argument that I saw put forward was, well, you know, habeas corpus is still in the Constitution, and the Congress has reaffirmed habeas corpus. Well, I remember when Congress how do you reaffirm something that's in the Constitution? One. Two, I remember when the Congress did it, and I remember the provision that's in there that says a person may be detained until their citizenship status is determined. Okay? This has nothing to do with NDAA. This has to do with the Congressional Habeas Corpus Bill of 3 or 4 years ago. And what I pointed out, and very few others did, I think, is that's there. You know, well, you can't indefinitely detain an American citizen, but there was a proviso in there talking about ascertaining. Well, you know, let's say you don't have a wallet on you, or your papers are not in order, as the saying goes, Sandra. How long, well, are they going to just turn you loose until they make sure you're an American citizen? Because I'm thinking the answer to that question is a most certain no.
Well, ask the fucking Mexican community about that question, Bob. You know, how many of their members have been sort of snatched and held,
right,
and they've been citizens now, right now.
Yeah.
And deported in some cases. So.
Well, I remember the raid at, it was a Hormel plant or something in Utah or wherever. And this was under the Bush administration, of course, so, you know, that caveat. But the ICE agents showed up, and this was a union shop, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they separated the Mexicans, quote-unquote, you know, because we're talking about Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Ecuador, Colombia, Peru.
Brown folks.
Yeah. And the ICE people, who were the same ICE people now, it's not like that changed when the administration's changed, right? The only thing that can change is maybe the operating philosophy for it. But the ICE agents called the workers into light-skinned Mexicans versus dark-skinned Mexicans and presumptively detained the so-called dark-skinned Mexicans on the theory that they would be the ones who were illegal. Now, among those so-called dark-skinned Mexicans were union workers with union cards. And you can't have a union card if you are not an American citizen.
Yeah, well, it takes a little bit more than just e-file or e-whatever. Exactly. No. It's just sort of, it's already completely out of control. And the other thing that I also thought was really disturbing over this holiday period is we seem to be going the route of the way we went with Japan and Iran with the sanctions. I don't know if you've heard, but, you know, we're trying to kill their ability to get fuel and sell fuel.
Right, because they can't refine gasoline.
This is what we did to Japan, you know, a few years before they... bomb the shit out of Pearl Harbor. You know what I'm saying? There's always a deeper story to this madness. And the thing that's killing me about Iran is they just seem to be ratcheting up. Both sides are ridiculous. And who's going to stop the ratcheting up?
And I don't have an answer to that question. And I think you and I both know, and everybody in the Horn family, Sandra, the president is being briefed on these scenarios. And I don't think we're dealing with a George W. Bush here. For all that, you know, for all that people want to refer to Obama as Bush Light or Bush the Darker or all the other things that I've seen.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry to stop you.
And that comes, you know, that's coming from the so-called left. For all that I've seen that, the fact of the matter is, I think this guy is a thinker. So he's not going to take a presidential daily briefing and pass it off to Brownie like he did with the August 6th briefing. He's going to study that stuff, and the scenarios are being promulgated about, you know, if Iran A, then we B, or if Iran X, then we Y.
Well, no, but the thing is...
And there are actual things in place, like the financial pressures.
And the U.S. seems to be doing everything to not allow the Iranians to say no. This is the thing that I'm looking at, which is really disturbing to me.
No,
we're pushing towards some sort of confrontation. And
you don't have to read tea leaves to know that there are a whole bunch of people in the Congress, most of whom, not all, but most of whom have R's after their name, that absolutely have spit dripping from their fangs, yearning for a war with Iran.
Well, there's a bill that's probably due to pass or be discussed. I don't know the name, but it would basically forbid any diplomatic contact between us and Iran.
Well, do you remember that Supreme Court case that was decided a year or so ago that turned NGOs that were trying to do peace work, you know, peace with an EA, not an IE, they were trying to do peace work with, you know, in places like with groups in Afghanistan and Lebanon and stuff. Oh, no. Under the Hoosis Act, the Supreme Court said, nope, government has a legitimate right to ban that. And that comes with criminal penalties, Sandra.
Unless you're some sort of terrorist outfit in Iran that the U.S. is trying to get off the list, you know. I mean, it's all just a bunch of BS. And, see, I'm disturbed because, once again, the oil prices, you know, I don't really, you know, see, it's a self-fulfilling thing because if they keep effing with stuff, the oil prices will keep going up and the parasites will take their, you know, get their beaks wet and us will be left paying over $4. It seems like when it gets past $4, that's when people start freaking out in the U.S. Up to that point, people put up with it. But then when it hits over four, then it becomes a domestic issue. So I'm not too sure what the hell they're doing.
And really only they and a few prominently placed corporations are the only ones who know what the hell they're doing.
Well, no, but I think a dollar per gallon now is resulting from speculation. And as you know, there was a law passed after the last run-up in oil prices to so-called stop this speculation. But guess what? The Obama administration isn't really enforcing that. Surprise, surprise. So we're still left with these parasites speculating. And if you speculate, you want it to go up. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You don't speculate on downward. No.
Right. So it's really dodgy. What's going on here, and I don't know. I just don't really understand the strategy. I really don't, because any sort of huge spike in the oil prices will just tip everything over into a double dip. So,
well, it'll cripple us, but good, right?
Well, it'll be double dip, global, you know, recession or whatever you want to call it. So I'm not too sure what is driving this push, because there's no way. I guess they're going to try to, because the model is, if we base it on what they did with Iraq, is you sanction, you push a country to the point where they respond in some way, and this is supposed to drive the American public into thinking that, okay, yeah, let's go get them. So I think
there, there's an aspect of this that has the earmark, Sandra, of a desperate urge to create a remember the Maine situation. You know, what was the famous telegram from Hearst or Pulitzer to his correspondent in the field? You provide the story, I'll provide the war.
Right, yeah. I mean, and obviously it's a lot more complicated now, you know, but it seems to be the same formula, and I'd be goddamn if the American public wouldn't be susceptible to that yet again, would they?
Well, come on. I mean, Iraq's over. We got an army that's just laying around doing anything.
And we have a, and that's our only industrial policy, per se, so pretty much, right?
Well, it's sobering, to say the least.
And if you go by what, you know, Sticklet is writing, you know, the sort of spending is one way to rectify this depression that we're in. I mean, I don't know. And there's not enough soldiers to fight over there, so they could do a draft.
Oh, but, yeah, that's the thing. I think if we had, I think this would be a time for a couple of well-placed, allegedly progressive members of the Congress to introduce a conscription act. Why not?
Well,
I mean, as hateful as I find that, you know, at least put it out on the radar that, you know, we're going to need some soldiers soon if this keeps going this way.
Well, I mean, we already, there's already so many, you know, hot wars going, because don't tell me that business in Syria ain't a civil war now, Jesus.
Because there's been enough defections from the regular military over to whatever we're calling it, the insurgency. Yeah, it's a civil war.
But anyway, I mean, it's just more kind of, I've just been tracking, you know, thanks to the interweb, you know, I can set up an alert and, you know, just stories about Iran and that. And so you're able to just look and see, I mean, the sort of increase.
Kind of watch it happen in real time, right?
Yeah, you know, because every day, beyond my alerts, but every day there's stories after stories in the New York Times, but even more belligerent. I don't know if you ever look at the Washington Post. Damn, that's off the chain.
Oh, I do.
I never knew. It's way out of control.
Well, it's a house organ for the defense industry, because all you got to do is drive I-66 out of the middle of D.C., and it's you know, right there on your left is a big old building that says Grumman, you know, Northrop Grumman.
Yeah. And anyway,
it's that's, you know, that's who the Post serves. Remember when they were busted for trying to peddle influence a couple of years ago with their bloggers?
Right. No, and they're the same ones that are trying to, that they have a huge vested interest in privatizing public schools too. So anyway, yeah. So the drumbeat is on, and it's a real worry, because you cannot pry progressives away from their beliefs that this man isn't what we are seeing him to be,
or what they projected, or what they projected upon him.
So I need to bring up Dennis Green again.
They are. They were what we thought they were.
No, I mean, I'm joking. But Obama, you know, it's sort of, I don't know. Okay, I'm just worried.
No, the man that ordered the offing of Bin Laden and what's his name in Yemen?
The American and
yeah.
The kid, yeah.
Right. I don't think that man would have a problem sleeping if he said, let's start raining death and destruction on Iran.
Well, it's just, like I said,
Because the telling point in this is that all semblance of dissent, and you can kind of mark the run-up to a war this way, Sandra, all semblance of dissent over whether or not Iran deserves to be bombed is gone. You know, it seems to me, based on what I read, that all the so-called professional journalists are saying, of course they deserve to be bombed, but the question is Obama that kind of guy?
Well, we need to separate from that, I'm saying, because, and look at the mechanism and the automation of the police, not the police state, but the security state that's in place. You know, at this point, it's like McCain, Obama, they pick Obama because he seems to be a bit more rational, but just as deadly, he can still say yes to whatever shoved in his face, right?
Sure he can, and for all we know about the decision-making process, it may have... Remember, when we dropped the atomic weapons on Japan, Harry Truman was in a position where his only decision was if he wanted to say no. The default was go.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that can always be out there. But this idea that we can no longer have a discussion about the underlying principles of what would constitute casus belli for a war with Iran is incredibly disturbing.
Well, I mean,
I'll have that discussion any day of the week. I don't think that dropping bombs on Iran. I don't think that there's anything out there that suggests Iran needs bombs dropped on them.
Well, no, and there's reports out there that they have Netanyahu and other various high ups in Israel saying they didn't believe that the Iranians would use it if they had one anyway. So, you know, you start really wondering, well, what is going on here? You see?
Yeah, and well, that, it would be lunacy. I mean, if North Korea has not used theirs, and they are, after all, the benchmark for insane, right?
Mm,
I mean, that's
supposedly.
that's precisely.
Right.
Then, and again, I'll just bring this up because I've said it so many times. Why would an Iran with 5 nuclear weapons that are going to be, you know, infant nuclear weapons, pretty much? Why would an Iran with a five nuclear weapon arsenal use it as a first strike on a country, because we're all paranoid about Israel, that has 200 of them, 200 or more?
You know, I mean, I just, you know, all of it is just really disturbing. And I'll let you go, but I must bring up this story, which really freaked me out. Now, you know that Nigeria is being completely annihilated by this horrific spill.
Yes.
Spill. You're okay, that just is out of control. It's bad. But did you know that in the cities, they're about to blow because, looky, the government decided to drop the fuel subsidies. One might ask, why would an oil-producing country like Nigeria have to provide fuel subsidies for their citizens? That's my first question. I mean, it's sick. Okay, so the subsidies are dropped. The prices didn't double. They tripled.
Yeah.
Overnight. So the unions are about to hold massive strikes in Nigeria. People are about to riot. But you have to ask yourself, what the fuck are these people getting for these oil companies are destroying their environments and they still can't fill up their fucking scooters? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and it's...
that's how sick it is. And that is how much, you know, the corruption, the people are being stripped of their resources, and the government can't even subsidize fuel to run their own economy. I mean, that's neoliberalism. That's it, right there, in a nutshell. I was just stunned and horrified at what's going on in Nigeria. Yeah, I don't know.
The natural follow up question, I suppose, Sandra, is at what point will the United States give a damn? Because it's Africa.
Well, it's
Africa with oil, and that's the point.
Well, and also, you know, the Nigerian government, you know, may seriously fall behind this shit because these sort of we're going to drop the subsidies because we need the income for infrastructure repair. Hello, what the fuck is Shell doing there for you? I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, and not just Shell. You know, a whole bunch of the Chevron's there, aren't they?
Whatever, and all those companies that are there. I mean, it's hideous. It really is.
And they're not contributing to the national well-being of the people.
No, but the fact is that a sovereign state. We know why they're not. I guess, you know, Mossade and any other sort of person that ever attempted to, we see what happens. But anyway, I just thought that was just...
Well, you gotta go over to that alternate story about this Montana court decision, Sandra. Anybody who ever wanted to understand corporations in America, the majority opinion came to the right conclusion, but one guy dissented, saying that they have to follow Supreme Court precedent, but delivered, and I read it, this blistering indictment of the idea of corporate personhood that goes as much to what happens here as to what happens in Nigeria, because he says, while corporations and human beings share many of the same rights under the law, they clearly are not bound equally to the same codes of good conduct, decency, and morality, and they are not held equally accountable for their sins.
Well, they're psychopaths,
wow,
aren't they?
Yeah. I think it is definitional psychopathy.
And that was a dissent?
Yeah.
You know, I have to check that out. Wow.
It is truly ironic that the death penalty and hell are reserved only to natural persons.
No, but see, now we're entering the realm of commonsensical, though. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what.
But I mean, and that's why this. I mean, it was a weird story, because usually when I see something that smacks of states' rights, you know what comes after. Like I said, a Confederate flag over somebody's capital, or keeping dark-skinned people from voting.
Mm-hmm.
But here's Montana engaging in real live, no kidding, states' rights to say that Citizens United does not apply to Montana. And in the dissent, the guy who dissented despises corporations as much as the majority does, and he wrote the real real hell and damnation language. It's profound.
Well, see, Montana is also a state that's trying to copy. I forget the first state in Canada to have, socialized medicine. A lot of interesting stuff is going on there.
And there's some progressivism out there, and
yeah.
God, it should be nurtured and cared for like it's in a cradle.
No, but I mean the corporate thing has become such an albatross now. It is really expanding, and I mean that's what. At least, I mean, I was sort of completely horrified when Citizen United happened, but it really has rapidly just strangled everything so quickly. That decision was in 2010, and here we are 2 years later, and it's just, I'm scared.
Well, I don't want to play prophet or anything, but it's playing out exactly as I suggested, because I said at the time, 2010's election will be ugly.
And this one?
But this one will be a real Lulu.
Yeah, well, I guess so. I mean, it's horrifying. Isn't the caucus tomorrow? Is it tomorrow?
Is it tomorrow? I guess it is.
And then
frankly, to use the proper version of that cliche, and I couldn't care less. I mean,
isn't South Carolina coming up?
South Carolina and Florida and New Hampshire and Iowa are all the January events.
Okay, so there's four in January.
And the level of crazy now with it really on top of things. This latest thing from Man on Dog Santorum.
Why is he's surging? It's really scary. Why? What's the latest?
Well, he's surging because people have figured out that Michelle Bachmann's going nowhere, and the little weirdo fundamentalist evangelicals have to have somebody to vote for, so they're going to vote for a lunatic, some lunatic, and the lunatic of their choice is Santorum. And this statement today, and I'm sorry, I don't mean it, but damn, just sit down.
Mm.
He was talking to a group in D.C., and he said that he would reform welfare to the point that it would offer no welfare at all. The same old tired trope about Medicare just makes people dependent on Washington. And then this is a gem. This is the race equivalent to the man on dog comment. Remember, if we get gay marriage, we'll have gay men marrying their dogs. Remember when he said that? Okay, so this is what he said. I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money.
Why did he put black people in there?
Well, because black people are the only people who get welfare.
What?
I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money.
How did, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean, maybe I'm just having some sort of disconnect. Where did the...
Well, it was a discussion about welfare, and a Republican cannot conceive of welfare, and this goes, you know, all the way back to Ronald Reagan and his creation of the welfare queen.
I know, but that trope is just so tired. I can't even believe it. That's all. I have to look up. I mean, I believe you, but I'm just kind of like, you know, Santorum, don't mention black people ever. Don't mention them now.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just am like,
this was a real gem-studded little speech, because he also, in another context, noted that contraception is unnatural. Now, notice he didn't say abortion. And he didn't say the pill.
No, well, he's unnatural. How
yeah, this
that?
Is right. No, he's a freak. He is a sick freak.
I mean, that's too much. And I you know, I mean, wow. And what? No one made any commentary about his.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting some coverage, but the follow up is almost as good as the original statement. I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn their money and provide for themselves and their families. Because, see, it's not just he doesn't want to give black people other people's money. No black people are earning their own money now.
Right.
I mean, Jesus, this is disturbing.
And so the $6 trillion in wealth that was lost after the financial crash was what? What was that money? That was what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What the hell is he talking about? And...
He is a wicked, hateful, nasty, vile example of everything that is wrong with America.
No, listen. Oh no. I mean, no, but you know, the idea that oh no, all of it is just too disgusting. Because I was laughing at the Ron Paul, you know, message going out to these people to shave their armpits or tattoos or beards or whatever before showing up.
Yeah, big.
And also
right.
The Democrat, and then if you're a Democrat, you can switch for one day, you know. So they're trying to round up the confused progressives.
Right, because well, he doesn't have enough. He doesn't have any juice beyond Iowa.
Yeah, so that's just going to be him there, and then that's it. Or does he have people on the ground and other?
You know, he's probably got some sort of organization on the ground in Florida and South Carolina. He doesn't have a prayer in New Hampshire. In New Hampshire, Romney's running around saying, "Listen, I was a moderate Republican in Massachusetts, and I'm still a moderate Republican. But there's some things you just have to say to those weirdos out there."
Yeah, no, because they ate Ron Paul's ass up, the establishment, because they started getting real scared. Right, that's why they brought up that newspaper again. Right,
sure,
because it wasn't. You know, I mean, I noticed how that came. Straight out, because I follow that David Frum, and that's all the right is talking about is Ron Paul. So I'm assuming the establishment is doing everything they can to get rid of him, right?
Yeah. Well, and Newt, too. I mean,
he could do that himself, though. He's such a...
Well, yeah, Newt can do himself any day of the week.
So disgusting. The more you saw him... the more disgusting people got. I mean, isn't he pretty much finished or what?
Yeah, he is. And I think you can see that he's finished in what the Romney people are now willing to do, because they're dog whistling to everybody. He sent his kids out, Romney did, on his own behalf, and talking to some folks in New Hampshire, which has shown itself to have its own fair share of the weird. One of the kids was asked when or if his daddy would ever share his tax returns, and the response by one of his kids, Matt, was that his daddy will release his tax returns when Obama releases his grades and birth certificate.
Oh, okay, so we're back to that again.
We're back there.
Okay, well, no, but I mean, this is because Romney is determined to convince what idiots that he's what? He makes $70,000 a year? Is that what we're supposed to believe?
Yeah.
You know, come on. I mean, if that's not a straight-up member of the Plutonomy, I don't know what is. And I think that is going to be a problem for him in the general election. I'm sorry. I think that his being worth a half a billion isn't going to serve him as well as he may think. you know?
It depends on the mood of the country, frankly.
Yes, I don't know. I just think he
depends on his ability, frankly, at the be all and the end all is his ability to be accepted by the weirdo right wing evangelical majority, and let's understand that it is a majority of the Republican Party today.
Yeah, but how is he gonna convince them, those people, about with his magic underwear and spaceship beliefs and the fact that most of them fundies think they're Mormons or cultists and Satanists? How is he gonna get around that? Tell me.
Because I don't know. I mean, I have known in my time a lot of evangelicals, and I've never heard. No, I mean, let's understand. These are the same people that, by God, would not vote for John Kennedy because he was a Catholic.
Well,
he managed to carry West Virginia in 1960, but let's be honest. It's because it's because there was a lot of West Virginia politics involved. There was a lot of pints of Four Roses coming out of a lot of trunks.
Well, no, but see, I'm really scared of the fundies, but I'm also scared of people talking to insects in ponds, spaceships, and magic underwear. That doesn't really imbue a lot of confidence in me either.
No.
So I'm scared of the Romney thing. I don't care what the hell he looks like. I'm like, well, what are you?
For all I know, out there at the Tabernacle or the Temple or whatever the hell they call it out there in Salt Lake City, they've probably baptized my poor dead mama and daddy so they can have their own private planet, and they'll baptize me when I'm dead, too.
Well, and it's just, Negroes couldn't get to the different stages until 1979, right?
Right, yeah, because persons of color were not fully human.
Right, so, you know, I'm all over the weirdness with that religion, too. I just wonder.
Well, it's all weird. It is all weird. And that's the sad thing, is that... Bush went out there and he dog whistled all of his right wing evangelical fundamentalism, and their pink little ears perked right up and they ran and voted for him. But the man was never seen going to church during his presidency, and I'm okay with that. Reagan was famously non-religious. I mean, this is a guy who gave a beautiful little virgin a cold hamburger and complained about the cost of the condom, but find me an evangelical Christian who won't. Oh, he brought us back to Jesus. So it's a question,
but
he sure did get road rough over Jeremiah Wright.
Oh, no, that was never ending. Listen, I'll let you go, but one more thing I forgot because I wanted to ask you about this. Have you heard about some freaks burning up cars in L.A.?
Yes.
What's that about?
Matt, I don't know. I mean, I put that in the Mad Max file.
50 of them so far.
It's like in what, New York? There was a little arson spree over the last few days?
Oh, I didn't know it was in New York, too, but in California, it's off.
Mosque got burnt.
Of course, somebody's trying to say, oh, this is the dark side of Occupy.
Oh, sure.
You can blame Occupy for fucking everything. But I have to say that the burning up cars, they had a little bit of that in Berlin, remember?
Yeah, they did.
Anyway.
No, I mean, but this isn't that, is it?
I don't know. I'll keep my eye on it. I don't know all the details.
Yeah, America needs to get back to watching Dick Clark.
God, stop. Anyway, have a good evening.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Will from Chicago. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Will. How are you? Good to hear from you.
Good. Busy. Working on a few things in the education front. I'm not saying that the education picture is bleak in Illinois and Northwest Indiana, but my master's degree might as well be worth its use as tissue paper, but checking out.
Well, yeah, because cops aren't the only people that we don't want smart folks in.
No. I mean, to be blunt, I am currently studying for a test in Massachusetts. Why Massachusetts? Because a friend who's a professor let me know that they are hiring in Massachusetts. So I like to say This is what we have been reduced to in our economy. Your education doesn't matter, and you may have to relocate simply because our local governments are cheap. Of course, my joke between the governors of Illinois and Indiana is a string of disasters about Pat Quinn is trying in Illinois to cope with the mess Blagojevich left behind. But doing well. Some thoughts, since I know we're approaching the end. Concerning the Iowa primary, my deepest regret looking at this primary race is that all candidates could not lose and be replaced by a randomly selected person from the Des Moines telephone book. I mean, quite literally, we have people trading in stereotypes such as Santorum, a man who, if his name survives 1,000 years, will likely be mocked by humans and possibly non-humans on other planets by someone saying about someone else, that guy is a real Santorum.
All right, he's so full of Santorum that, yeah.
Yeah, suffice it to say, I think President Obama's biggest strength for the re-election effort is that he has candidates who are not going to reach out to the middle or parts of their base. Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich will not inspire the great American middle to...
No, and frankly, the Republican Party has lost Hispanic America to the tune of 2/3 to 1/3.
Yes, I mean, one of my best friends here in the Chicago area is Hispanic, and told her the Republican strategy should be called dead man walking. Why? Because for a lot of the western states, demographics is going to kill them. Wait 10, 20 years, and the GOP will be hurting mightily in Arizona, which I still closely follow. And then when you bring up Mitt Romney, I forget who said it. Looks like the guy who just fired you. I mean, it's very easy to...
Oh, yeah, with that smooth, smarmy voice. You know, you've been very valuable to the company, but we're going in a different direction, and you've got an hour to clean out your desk.
Exactly. I mean, Bain Capital has screwed over lots and lots of American...
Oh, probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, without a doubt.
Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. He has flip-flopped more than the chefs at IHOP on Father's Day for breakfast.
Well done.
And there is no way I see him picking up parts of the South and parts of the rural central states.
Well, I think we'll see some of that. The benchmark will be turnout on Super Tuesday. Frankly, that's my guess. Hey, Will, I've got to hit it, but it's good to hear from you, my friend, and a very happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Keep up the good work.
Will do. I hope we'll have more time next time. Bye. Will, calling from the Chicago area. We're off to a rousing start here on this week, and we'll be back tomorrow evening. Hope you'll be able to join us. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, my head writer, David in Tennessee, has the night off for the Rose Bowl. John Fox, who does everything. What doesn't John Fox do? He just got the front door to the chat room working again. Thank you very kindly, John. We'd all appreciate it very much. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Also, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there and learn about all the heroic work of Coal River Mountain Watch. Remember, Rick Smith, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that's noon Pacific, right here on the horn for the foreseeable future. Check him out. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.